All right, so we got Bobby Baker here, CEO of a marketing and investing firm called The Global Objective, a performance marketer, ex-Division I athlete. We met out in LA, complete stud. You know, it's been probably a month or two since we connected last, but as soon as I knew your story, I was like, we have to have you on. I think you're like the perfect archetype of what our community is all about, right? You were a Division I athlete playing at a high level, and then you transitioned into entrepreneurship and you've grown a really successful business and things are going really well for you. So we're happy to have you on, Bobby. And I guess maybe if you could start just kind of by introducing yourself to our listeners and telling your story of where you've been.
Yeah, awesome. Appreciate that. First and foremost, thank you guys for having me. You know, as soon as you guys told me what you guys were doing here, I was like, I got to be a part of this. So really do appreciate it. So ultimately, what I'm doing now is really performance focused. We work with a ton of different brands, some e-commerce, some local businesses, some service-based businesses, but ultimately everything we're doing marketing related is focused on ROI, right? It's all of our clients want to know is what's the return on investment, like how much money went in, how much money came out, and ultimately that's the sort of the performance element. We don't do a ton of the stuff that's just for kind of show or create some of those fluffy assets. We're all about direct response. We're all about performance creative. We're all about, you know, media buying and email affiliate influencer. I mean, really holistic approaches on scaling brands nowadays. I come from a background where we were, I come from kind of a corporate performance creative agency. It was all about how do we make things really scale. And so I've started to really try to dive in, figure out how we can sort of methodically build virality into what we're doing. And so a lot of times that just sort of carries our brands. But yeah, man, it's a lot of fun. Some of the brands we invest in, some of the brands we're just kind of working with on kind of a monthly retainer sort of base. But yeah, having a lot of fun with that, man. Love to see brands grow. Love to see some of these smaller brands go from, you know, 5, 10, 20K a month to 100, 150, 200,000 a month. I mean, you see these founders really evolve, and ultimately that's what really kind of brings a lot of passion to us.
I love it, man. So let's talk about that model for a second. How are you deducing which companies to invest in? Are you guys consulting for equity? Like, what does those deals look like as opposed to people that just have you on as retainer?
Yeah, great question. So there's three things we typically offer clients, or three sort of routes, I'd say we offer clients. And so starts with the analysis, the due diligence that we do on the front end to just kind of audit the brand and understand what are the weaknesses, what are the opportunities. And after that, we have a pretty clear indication on like, how can we take this brand from where it is today to 3 to 10X. If we can't take it between 3 to 10X, we're not even going to waste a brand's time. So that's the first process. From there, we have kind of these three sort of lanes brands fall in. And one is kind of the execution where we're coming on and we're managing maybe their ad accounts, or we're managing their email marketing or their affiliate strategy, their influencer strategy. That's the executionary sort of side of things. And then we have the consulting side of things. And this is where maybe they have a team in-house, maybe they have media buyers, they have an agency, or they have someone, some type of support where they don't necessarily need the execution, but they need some of the strategy, they need some of the guidance, the leadership. And those are cases where we come on kind of like a fractional CMO in some cases where we're super involved and we're actually leading the team. And then some cases where it's just kind of one-on-one with a founder or with an owner or even the marketing team. If they have, say, a CMO, we can kind of come in, help them build the strategy, make sure that all of the different areas of their media cycle is moving pretty smoothly. And then the last piece, last sort of third vertical is the investment side of things. And so this is a little bit more on the kind of the M&A side of things, where we're actually going in looking at how can we either acquire a company for the business, help the business acquire for like a merger or some type of like bolt-on, or we're actually looking at the company to acquire itself, right? So we may invest from like a minority share, 10, 20%, or we may get invested from, you know, more of a majority, 60, 70, 80, or even 100%, depending on the type of business it is. And so, yeah, those are kind of the three categories. It's execution, it's consulting, and then it's the investing side of things. So
That's cool. So what does your client avatar look like? What's the typical business you're helping and you know, from a revenue standpoint, maybe, or just a, I don't know, you tell us, I guess, what other features we could be missing here aside from just revenue and like the type of line of business they're in.
Yeah, that's a great question. I think it comes down to, it comes down to a lot of like B2C. Is it B2C business? We know we can scale it because we know that the channels that we have that are available, there's a lot more availability from a scaling aspect and performance marketing. So B2C is probably, or B2C, D2C, whatever you want to call it, is definitely 95% of our portfolio. We do have a couple occasions where we're B2B focused. We're using things like LinkedIn or some of these other platforms that are a little bit more business style. But just generally speaking, we've worked with all different types of brands. So brands like K-Swiss, the e-commerce brand, or they were retail, wholesale, old school. We kind of came in, evolved their D2C side of things and really helped expand there. Other brands like Tom Brady's TB12 Sports, his nutrition brand that he has there, sports and nutrition brand, and then Drake's candle brand, Better World Fragrance House. Those are some of the D2C brands that we helped. And so they really are all different sizes. Like those are some of the older brands or the more well-known brands, but we work with a lot of smaller brands. I come from the corporate side where we're working with these huge brands, and that was cool. It was great, you know, kind of for clout, but at the end of the day, like you don't really see much of an impact on the lives of the people in those businesses, right? Like you scale a brand like K-Swiss, like nothing around you changes. You don't see any of that, you know, any of that impact. All that excess cash is going to some guy out in like Korea or something, right? Whoever acquired the company. But I started to get really excited about these brands that are a little bit smaller, right? For example, he had this brand, really, really cool founder. He had this one guy brand. It was him and he had like two people that were managing the manufacturing, the warehouse. And so they were basically kind of trying to do it all. And it was really the founder who was doing the marketing. He was doing all of the email. He was doing the social media. He was doing the hiring, firing, the HR, like every single customer service. He was doing it all. And the business was doing decently well. It was a pretty, pretty good business when it came to us. But he was lacking, you know, kind of the growth potential that he could have been hitting. And so he was able to outsource that stuff to us. We were able to take over. And I mean, within the first couple months, we had massive cuts in CPAs, cost per acquisition. So we were able to reduce their cost of advertising by like 50%. And ultimately, things like that really allowed them to scale the business really upwards of 5-6x of where it was when he came on board. I mean, you saw this business go from one to kind of three employees, including the warehouse guys, to now 10, 15 employees, right? They're starting to hire people in-house. The founder goes and buys two new houses. He has two kids. He goes on vacations. And like, that's what we do it for. Like we do it to see that type of impact. Right. Like a brand like TB12 Sports, like that guy's already rich. He's like already good. You know, an extra $100,000 a month is just a drop in the hat for him. But a brand like this, where, you know, he's really kind of evolving, his life changes because of the work we're doing. That's why we do it. That's what we're really passionate about. So it really does vary. To answer your question, I mean, we've had again, e-commerce brands, local businesses, service-based businesses, shoe brands. We've had clothing brands, retail, electronics. We've had shoelace brands. We've had, I mean, you name it. We have realtors. We have all different types of things. So it really, really does vary, very, very industry agnostic. But I find a lot of those fundamentals are stay the same, right? You still need a great email strategy. Still need an affiliate strategy, an influencer strategy, still need a great media buying. So no matter what sort of vertical you're in, you're going to need some of the same elements.
So let's talk about the evolution of some of these platforms, right? Like let's say a Facebook or now Meta, and how back in the day, and I don't claim to know everything about marketing, but just from the lingo that I know cost per clicks were very cheap back in the day. Now it's an incredibly competitive landscape. How have you seen that evolve, and how are you able to do it better than others from a competitive standpoint? And also on the back end of that, like the client that you were talking about, where do you see people that aren't experts in this space go wrong? And why were you able to trim the fat 50% for that client?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think it depends on at what point you're kind of looking at this, because recently what's been the biggest mover, the biggest reason why a lot of brands have not had a lot of success on paid media campaigns is because of a lot of the iOS changes, the tracking, the attribution. For those who don't know, basically you used to be able to track up to about 90% or so of performance. So if you ran a campaign and you had 100 sales, then you saw inside of the ad platform about 90% of those track to your campaigns. On Shopify, you saw 100, but on, say, Facebook, a Meta platform, you saw maybe 90. And so that was still a pretty good ratio. You only lost about 10% of your signal. When iOS happened, basically the government cracked down on all these data harvesting platforms like Google and Meta, and basically said, and Apple, and was like, look, you guys have to create more privacy for the consumers. And so what happened was, obviously, you know, Apple went and cut the cord. Now you see these great marketing campaigns. I don't know if you guys have seen a lot of these billboards. Apple has one like this where it's like covering the person's face. And at the bottom, it says, your privacy is your privacy. And basically, it was their way of basically making lemonade out of lemons, right? Like the government tells them, cut the cord, cut down on privacy, blah, blah, blah. And Apple says, all right, well, let's figure out how we could turn this into a marketing strategy. And so that's what they've been doing. You guys have probably seen some of those ads. And what this did to marketers and to brands was it impacted you pretty significantly to where it went from 90% down to about 60% or so, right? Give or take, depending on a couple of variables. And so that 40%, going from 10% signal loss to now 40% signal loss is significant, very significant for a lot of brands, right? There's essentially 40% of your efforts are untrackable, untraceable, right? And so you had to start using these other attribution platforms, things like Triple Well, AdBeacon, Northbeam, these types of attribution platforms that help you tie kind of the pieces back to the platforms, right? So instead of you losing that 40%, use an attribution platform and suddenly you have 90% back again, right? Mm-hmm. So not sure how long those types of platforms will last before they, you know, crack down on those guys too. But what that did was that made our marketing strategies a lot more challenging because you didn't have that visibility. There was a little bit of guessing. You had to have more of a holistic approach. You had to look at what are the total amount spent versus the total revenue, and then subtract like email and subtract some of these other variables. So it made marketing a little bit more complicated than it once was. And what that also did was that signal loss that impacted the algorithm's ability to learn and optimize, right? So if there's 40% less conversions coming into the platform, then the platform has 40% less data to go off of in its optimization and its learnings. So what happened was, as soon as that happened, a lot of people's campaigns just went downhill and just started to crash. And if you didn't adopt some of these new technologies or some of these new methodologies, then you pretty much kind of went by the wayside. So I think that was one of the big things, was adopting new strategies and methodologies to kind of just evolve with the economy now. And then the other variable outside of that is having more, again, of this holistic approach, this omnipresence, right? You guys are familiar with that. You guys are doing things like, you know, podcasting, and you guys are on social media. You guys are tackling different channels to become visible in different places to different people, right? Some people are avid LinkedIners, right? If that's the term. But there's avid Instagrammers, there's avid TikTokers. And so the more platforms you're on, the more visibility you have to some of those people. And so we started to tackle more channels and really try to approach this more holistic sort of what I call the media cycle, which the media cycle basically includes six things: copywriting, content creation, media buying, CRO, conversion rate optimization, email and SMS, and then PR. And for us, PR includes affiliate marketing. It includes influencer marketing. So those sort of six foundational elements, to me, in my opinion, are what create the foundation for a really strong media a media business, right? Because any business nowadays in 2023 is has to be a media business. You're part media business and then part whatever you set out to do in the beginning, right? So when you can tackle those things, it creates sort of this process that just keeps on cycling over and over and over. Your influencers feed back into your media buying strategy. Your results from your media buying feed into your CRO and your website, into your email and SMS, right? So all of these things really work cohesively. So yeah, really kind of dialing it back instead of just being hyper-focused. A lot of people just wanted to run Facebook campaigns, but you had to kind of take a step back and make sure that holistic strategy is really healthy.
So a lot of times we're still running into folks who, you know, maybe they were a chiropractor and they were just seeing their patients in their practice in that physical brick and mortar building for so long. But now they're like, hey, like, I'm only making my money right now with my hands. If I don't have my hands and I'm not showing up to work every day, I'm not making money. So they're trying to have this digital presence. They're trying to break through that next level, whether it's, you know, selling courses, selling online coaching, whatever that looks like. How do you, like, what advice do you have for folks in that phase of transition where they're doing good revenue? Maybe they're doing a couple hundred grand, if half a million to a million a year in revenue, but they're trying to scale and grow on a digital platform, but they're having a trouble finding that customer online. They're having trouble narrowing and niching down as to who they should be advertising to in the first place. So like, what's your, I guess, where does your mind go with that scenario? We encounter that a lot in our world. So like, what do you think about that? And like, what should they be thinking about in order to find that
target? Yeah, that's a great thought, man. I actually love chiropractors, physical therapists, massage therapists. I mean, I love that world. That area is awesome. And that's one of the areas that we love to invest in the most, just because those are the companies that are still running on fax machines, right? Like they still have a fax machine in the back. They're like sending stuff through fax. And so they haven't evolved into the digital era nearly enough as they could. They have a ton of like referrals from their existing businesses, but they have no media strategy, right? Like they're taking referrals from, you know, wherever, like doctors and some of these other organizations that send them people, but there's no real strategy. So, and that's not 100% always the case for everybody, obviously, but there's majority of that industry I find to be really lacking the digital presence. And so for companies like that, I'd say there's a couple of ways. I mean, the biggest thing is like, what are your resources, right? Like what are the resources that you have available? If you're a small shop, you don't have the time to create a media strategy and to manage the media strategy. But if you have the funds, you should invest into that and find someone who solely focuses on media strategy, right? Like a lot of times you find people who like want to expand their business and they're like, yeah, I know I need to be marketing on social media, or I know I need to be, you know, doing some of these things, but they don't have the time, right? And so it's like, okay, like focus on, back to the example of the founder that came to us and he was trying to do it all. His business, when he got out of the business and was working on the business exploded. So that's the same sort of advice I would give to someone that's managing a chiropractor or some type of organization that's a little bit more of the old school side of maybe marketing or their strategies. I'd say invest in someone, a resource, whether that be a contractor. Some agencies are good. I'm kind of anti-agency because I've been through so many of them and don't really love the experience that you typically get with some agencies. But ultimately, is if you can find someone that can help take that off your hands, you're going to be able to stretch that so much further, right? If you're a one-man show and you're trying to do the media buying too, or say the media strategy too, you're going to have some trouble managing clients and then hopping into the platform and optimizing. I mean, our goal is when we bring on clients, especially from the executionary side or even a consulting side, one of our methodologies is 90 ads in 90 days. And that means like we want to test over 90 different assets in the next 3 months. And that goes to show you like the level of testing that we take when we're coming into these strategies. And so if you're a one-man show and you're trying to test, you're trying to create 90 ads and then test 90 ads in 3 months, and you're trying to manage, you're trying to, you know, crack some necks, then you're gonna struggle a bit. So I'd say, you know, just investing in great resources. If you do want to go that route, you feel like you have the time. There are some cases where you know the shop may not be busy, and you're trying to make it more busy, and so you have that free time. And then so in those cases, I would say, if you have the time, obviously like education, learn how this stuff works so that you're not burning money, especially when it comes to media buying. You're spending money to make money. So if you're not doing that efficiently, it's going to end up costing you more than it's making you, which is never fun. But I'd say just kind of starting with a really good strategy, again, focusing on kind of those six things I mentioned earlier in the media cycle, creating good messaging, like how do we want to communicate with our consumers? That's the copywriting, and then the content, you know, whether you want to hop on a video chat like this, or you want to hop on a camera, if you're really good at one of these iPhone, pull your iPhone out and hey guys, I'm blah, blah, blah. Those work the best, by the way. But They're super raw. They're super native. That's what your friends are doing on social media. So they stick out a lot when you're advertising with those on social media. After you have your content, then you talk about media buying. Again, like, educate yourself if you're starting from scratch, or find someone who does this for a living. It's kind of like the NBA. Like, if you're trying to go and compete with the guy in the NBA, you want some NBA players on your side of the ball, right? Because ultimately, it's kind of like a dog eat dog sort of world, and your dollars are the things that are kind of at risk. So having a good media buying strategy, structuring appropriately, making sure you're using best practices, then going into the website or the landing page, making sure that it's converting at a good rate, set up things like Hotjar, where you can actually watch screen recordings and you can actually review those recordings, right? So if someone comes to your website and they click on certain buttons, you want to know what buttons are your highest percentage of clicks, right? If you know that shop now button right at the top of the screen it garners 60% of your clicks, then you may want to make sure that button goes to the most popular, most profitable thing that you have, right? And so being aware of how your website's performing or how your landing page are performing, that's one of those things. And then email and SMS, everybody does it, but not everybody does it very well. Not bombarding is the number one thing. Don't send it more than twice a week. Once a week is usually my preference, but making sure that you're telling stories, you're providing testimonials, you're actually giving actionable advice and support, and then showing why you're different from the rest. You can do comparisons, us versus thems, and just kind of help people make that decision by kind of taking some of the research out. And then if you've taken care of all of those other things, then you start to add in some of these supplemental resources, again, like influencers. Start finding local influencers, reach out to them. Again, hire a team if you can. If you can't, just start getting scrappy, reaching out to people, telling them you'll give them a free service, you'll give them a free something in exchange for some content. That really, really works well. It works better than any of this highly produced stuff that we shoot nowadays. And then looking at other resources like partnerships and other organizations that can help.
If you haven't noticed, this is a relatively nuanced area of someone to try and take on in their business, where if you're a chiropractor, you should probably outsource this so you're not burning money, like Bobby had said. So with that, to that point, what does your role look like inside of your business? Because this looks like it's an extremely, you know, tough fulfillment when it comes to, it's very hands-on when it comes to fulfilling, because you're inside of all these relationships trying to test and all this stuff. So how are you able to, you know, bring someone through a sales cycle, still generate business on the front end, but also deliver on the back end? Like, what does your day-to-day look like, and how have you built out your team?
Yeah, that's a good question as well. I think, so just to give a little bit of history and background, so I came from two agencies. I was with Grant Cardone and Frank Kern, with those guys over at the 10X Enterprise. And then I was with Mu6, an agency here in LA, really big, kind of went corporate, was acquired by Dentsu and some big companies. And so both of those places had very different sort of strategies and methodologies about how the business was ran. The biggest thing that stood out to me was Mu6, kind of their process was essentially this jack of all trades. They have sort of a jack of all trades, this guy or girl that knows how to do kind of everything. And they essentially, for great, you know, profitability, they put more clients onto fewer people, and that allowed them to create more profitability. At Grant Cardone's place, they didn't do nearly as much just in terms of services, but they were a little bit more specified in some of the different things that they did, right? And so the approach that we wanted to take when I left those places, I wanted to kind of find a bridge between the two, because I think there was good things about both. And so what I did was I created this sort of process where we have specialists for all of those resources. Like, we have a copywriter that specializes in copy and only writes copy every single day. So you're not going to be our copywriter, right? Like a regular person is not going to be our copywriter, because that's all they do all day. And that's like making headlines that convert, creating captions that convert, writing copy for the landing pages and their websites, and creating copy for the email, right? So creating tones and languages and stuff like that. We have specialists in every single area of what I've mentioned. So the media buyers, there's a specialist in media buyers. I come from a media buying background, so I'm always in the ad accounts. I'm always increasing, decreasing budgets and turning ads on and off. But we have other specialists that are trained media buyers that just media buy all day, every day. And then same thing for the designer, same thing for the email, same thing for influencers. Those are specialists in those areas. So if you're going to compare the guy who does it all, like some people have like one guy in house that like, they like, hey, I want you to do everything. And then you're trying to compare them or compete with a team of specialists. It's like playing, it's like the all-star team versus like a high school team. Like you can't compete with us. So that was kind of the strategy that we tried to bring. We tried to bring in these specialists that could really, really kind of scale each little area. They're going to really get the best out of their copy. We're going to get the best out of that website because we have people who are solely focused on that. And then the bridge where we kind of brought the other element in is where we have sort of this jack of all trades, which is more of a project manager, someone like myself who literally is just focused on facilitating all of these different resources, right? Making sure that our copywriters and our media buyers are in sync, are essentially hitting their targets or their goals. And ultimately that's allowed us ton of efficiency. Like we're able to scale brands faster because we're not asking one guy to do this and to do that and to do this. The last agency I was at, it was like we were doing the audits on the websites, we were doing the content creations, we were creating the scripts for the content, we were running the media buying campaigns, we were handling client communication, and it was just too much. It was too much. And that's how you burn out. And so that was, again, like it was a great learning experience because I was able to take what I learned from both places and create a process that was a lot more fluid and a lot more successful for our clients. So that's kind of it in a nutshell, the executionary side of things when we're consulting with brands. Again, they have email sometimes or they have an agency that's running their media buying. We'll come in, we'll have the same sort of strategy, same sort of media cycle approach, but we kind of take it in a way where we're using their existing resources and we're making sure that they're actually working together because you have like one guy doing this, one guy doing that, and they're not very cohesive.
I love it. So, you know, this has been awesome, right? This has been very business driven. What I would like to do, as long as everybody here is in agreement, is I'd like to do a part two of this podcast and talk about more about, you know, you as the business owner, building your team out, and then also your previous life of a Division I athlete and kind of that transition. So I think we hold that off for part two. I think this was a ton of awesome direct value to our listeners. We have a ton of people that are listening to our podcast that this directly applies to. So I know that there's a ton of value to extract. We're excited to put this one out. I guess as we wrap up, would you mind, you know, we ask all of our guests this in at the end, but would you mind just talking about what consistency means to you and how that shows up in your life? It could be personal, it could be professional, it could be both.
Yeah, consistency is a great word, man. I'm glad you guys actually chose that to kind of represent what you guys are doing here. And I think consistency, you named it. I mean, it goes from personal to business to relationships. I mean, every single thing that you do, consistency is what matters because everything else is a one-off, right? The same thing goes with like the marketing strategy. Like if you run one campaign and it doesn't work, you weren't consistent and that's it. You're going to be like, this advertising thing doesn't work. It's like, well, how consistent were you? Going back to kind of the 90 ads in 90 days, that's consistency, right? Like we are testing a crap ton of different variations to just try to figure out what's going to work. And so I think consistency is the only way you will find the best in yourself, the best in others, the best in what you're doing. And so really consistency to me, even from sports background, right? Like you're doing reps, you go ahead and you get a great pump in a day, but you take a week off, you're done. You're back to ground zero. And so that consistency is essential in I think everything we do. So love the word, love the term, and love that you guys are really promoting that.
Dude, very, very well said, man. I appreciate you. I mean, you over-delivered on this podcast and we got super tactical, and this is for a very specific niche of people, but that specific niche just so happens to listen to this podcast, which is awesome. So if you guys are interested in working with someone like Bobby, definitely hit him up. We'll put his stuff in the bio. And then I think part two should really be about the business athlete side of things and what your athletic background, how that transpired into being a successful entrepreneur. That's something that we're very passionate about. So I'm excited for that. Bobby, thank you so much for coming on, man. And it's been an absolute pleasure, man.
Thanks again, you guys, for having me, man. This was a pleasure. Always fun to kind of chat and go through some of this stuff. So thanks again, guys.
Totally.
Doom. Great stuff. It should stop. It says stopping. I'm not sure.